And to the second part of your question, Nick, what information did we share? We shared everything we could find and added our expert opinion, because that's what people really needed. It wasn't just finding the article and posting it. It was doing that, but adding, here's what we understand this article means. Here's the social media's current rumor. Why did this rumor start? And then what's the answer? How does it attach to it? Because battling that misinformation became just as important as providing the information that was being available.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show, where we believe that quality measurement leads to better outcomes. Let us become your go-to source for all things related to quality and medication use in healthcare. We will hit on trending health topics as they relate to performance measurements and find common ground for payers and practitioners. We will discuss how the Equip platform can help you with your performance goals, and we will also make sure to keep you up to date on pharmacy quality news. So buckle up and put your thinking cap on. The Quality Corner Show starts now.
Hello, Quality Corner Show listeners. Welcome back to the podcast, where we focus on medication use, quality improvement, and how we can utilize pharmacists to improve patient health outcomes. I'm your host, Nick Dorich, and on today's show, we are continuing our series in immunizations. This episode is going to focus on a topic that has been increasingly important over the last several weeks and months, and it will continue to be a focus in the coming months. The topic is vaccine confidence. Now, I personally prefer to address it as vaccine confidence, but you may also see this being referred to as vaccine hesitancy. My thought process is quite simple. When talking about vaccines, I find it better to use more positive terminology. For a number of reasons, often tied to medication misinformation, this issue has become quite sensitive. And when dealing with patients and their feelings and emotions, removing any negativity can make the difference for creating the right environment to change minds. Since the COVID-19 vaccine became available, healthcare providers have been working with public health officials, employers, and community groups to inform about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine. There's a number of unique approaches, and our guests for today have been involved with some of those education efforts. Let's go ahead and introduce those guests from the Rhode Island Pharmacist Association. Welcome to the show, Matt LaCroix and Chris Federico.
Thanks for having us, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Matt and Chris, before we talk about vaccine confidence and what the team at the Rhode Island Pharmacist Association, or RIPA, has been doing, we need to hear from both of you. Do you mind providing us a quick background of yourself, your experience in healthcare, and what you do now?
So, Nick, what I currently do now is I work for the University of Rhode Island as the coordinator for accreditation and assessment. But prior to this position, I was an academic pharmacist on medical general medicine floors dealing with the general admission population. But for COVID, I got very involved with the Rhode Island Disaster Medical Assistance Team and helped with some of their mass vaccination sites and provided care to patients that way during the most recent COVID experience.
And for me, my prior history, I started off as an ambulatory care pharmacist, mostly managing patients with chronic disease states, mostly diabetes. Now, currently, I'm a medical science liaison for a pharmaceutical company working in renal and cardiotherapeutics. I still practice as a pharmacist part-time or per diem at Rhode Island Hospital. On top of that, similar to Matt, you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic, just so many different opportunities to really support the community. So I helped out with Rhode Island DMAT, as Matt referenced, and then also some other clinics throughout the state, not only community-based pods that we call them, but also some of the more underserved areas as well.
Before we continue, I do want to make sure to call this part out, especially because the beginning of the month in talking about immunizations and vaccine, we spoke with Allie Jo Shipman from the National Alliance of State Pharmacy Associations, or NASPA. So Matt and Chris, can you also explain your ties to the Rhode Island Pharmacist Association so that we're keeping with that theme?
Absolutely. Chris and I are both part of the executive committee. I'm the immediate past president for the Rhode Island Pharmacist Association. And Chris is now the president of the association as July 1st. which he's very thankful and happy to be.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. You know, so we, you know, for both of us, I'll give a quick shout out. And obviously for you, Nick, as well, we're graduates of the University of Rhode Island College of Pharmacy. So growing up, you know, within that school, we really got connected with RIPA many years ago. And for us, you know, we started, you know, getting our feet wet with different objectives for the organization. And really for COVID-19, it's been something that we've been able to help not only ourselves, but other members flourish and really support, not only through, you know, giving vaccines, education, but also social media advocacy and education as well.
Yeah, thanks for that description, guys. And I really appreciate, Matt, your service. I know your service to the State Association is not done, still continues even in the role as the media pass. And Chris, welcome to that role for you. I know you got a big year ahead, and again, it's going to be years of service after that. But even from my own experience as a member, a former executive member for the RIPA when I was a student, really know how much work goes into it and how that group serves as a voice for not just the pharmacist in the state, but working and coordinating with a lot of other healthcare professionals and public health officials. We'll get into that for today's topic, and I'm really excited to have that discussion. So I think without further ado, we're going to get to today's questions. But before we do that, we have to hear the breakdown.
Now it's time for the breakdown. As Quality Corner show host, Nick will ask three main topic questions. Our guests will have a chance to respond, and there will be some discussion to summarize the key points. This process will repeat for the second and third questions, which will wrap up the primary content for this recording. After that, expect to end on a closing summary, usually containing a bonus question. Now that we have described the process, let's jump into the questions.
Matt and Chris, for our first question, I want to discuss vaccine safety and effectiveness. The Rhode Island Pharmacists Association, or RIPA, started engaging early and often to address vaccines and to inform its members, other healthcare providers, and the public, a more general audience, about why pharmacists were promoting that patients should receive the COVID-19 vaccine. So what did the team share about COVID vaccine safety and effectiveness, and why was it important for the group to share this message?
So Nick, the easier question is, why was it important for RIPA to share this message? It's because when the pandemic first started and we saw that shutdown of businesses, pharmacies never closed. We remained the most accessible healthcare provider, and we needed our members to be able to speak with authority of the medication experts that we are to our patients and to each other. There was such a deluge of information coming out at that point that we knew that our members that were working on the front lines couldn't keep up. So myself, Chris, Jeff Bratberg, and our APPIA student, Emily Ubing, did an amazing job going through the literature, trying to digest it, trying to focus on what was important in those early days as we were learning what was going on. And then as the vaccines were being developed, helping pharmacists understand where things were in the different pathways and where the safety was, because we know not everyone enjoys going and reading a 600-page report that's submitted to CDC, but we have the ability to sit there and break it down and have the time to do that as experts. So Chris, I know you wanted to add something there too.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, this started really in March when really everything started to close and we really started to get concerned about the virus. And I remember, you know, Seminar by the Sea, which is the hallmark CME program for URI College of Pharmacy. Dr. Jeff Bratberg went up there and did a more of a Q&A session about COVID-19. And, you know, we discussed with him after that, you know, this would be great to actually push out to our members. And why don't we actually use social media platform to, you know, bring this to light, really reach a broader network. We can't do it in person. It was really the last in-person event that actually occurred until later in the year. And so we started there. You know, we thought it was going to be a one or two time episode, and it actually turned into going to more than 58 episodes over the course of a year and a half. So we barely took any breaks. I think there was two actual times that we took breaks with the show. To Matt's point, you know, misinformation was rampant. You know, I recall times where, you know, friends and family, my mom asking questions and, you know, getting concerned and wiping groceries down and things like that. And I think when it starts to hit people that we know, that's when we really, you know, really elevated ourselves as a profession and tried to get the message out. So for us, you know, it was really the four of us at the beginning meeting almost daily before our job started, at the end of the day, weekly touch points, putting presentations together. Obviously, that became unsustainable. And really, we had to kind of distill it down into more succinct presentations or discussions. But, you know, what we learned was that the method of communication had to be streamlined, had to have a further reaching audience. And really, at the end of the day, you know, we needed to get the message out to inform people so that they would have the tools to really meet their patients, their providers, and have the information exchange much more effectively.
And to the second part of your question, Nick, what information did we share? We shared everything we could find and added our expert opinion because that's what people really needed. It wasn't just finding the article and posting it. It was doing that, but adding, here's what we understand this article means. Here's the social media's current rumor. Why did this rumor start? And then what's the answer? How does it attach to it? Because battling that misinformation became just as important as providing the information that was being available.
We had times where we would hear from people, you know, within the community asking about certain questions. So when we started to hear it two or three times, we knew we had to address it. And that's when we started to decide, hey, besides the four of us, why don't we start bringing in some other experts in the field? So that's what we started to do afterwards, bringing people that were more content experts or really a person that, you know, the community could resonate with.
Question for you, Matt and Chris, as it relates to this topic, and I think, you know, the engagement is well and good. And you went into this because you wanted to be a voice and present the necessary information and to have it articulated in a way that was easy to understand for, as you had said, your RIPA members and other pharmacists. But I expect things often, they grow their own legs and become something different and much more than what you ever anticipated. What did you see as far as the engagement or engagement numbers and how people, you know, interacted with the show? I'd like to hear a little bit about that before we go on to our next question.
Yes, I'll take that one, Nick. So I actually ran the numbers because I think, you know, we were ingrained in with the posts every single week and tracking them. And we would see posts that would engage, you know, more than 1,000 views. You know, if we actually broke it down to individual viewerships, it was typically in the hundreds. But when we look at the reach, you know, our top day was over 6,600 in terms of, you know, the highest daily reach that we had. Just to put that into perspective, the year prior, the reference year prior, we had about 10,000 posts. I mean, engagements. Excuse me. If you take out the COVID-19 posts that overlap in that year prior reference range, we had only 1,000 posts or engagements, I should say engagements, excuse me, within that prior year. If we look at the past year, so looking at March, let's say 31st until June 30th, we had 48,000 engagements and reaches. So it just shows you our increase went from 1,000 all the way up to 48,000. So I'd say that's a pretty substantial jump. And many people would say, well, you know, did you guys advertise? And so we did. We tried that here and there. We tried using, you know, some of the paid advertisement functions. My budget was $5 per post. And we had about 6,400 in paid posts, which we only spent $135 over the course of that time period. So I would say that's pretty good reach considering the investment there.
Chris, yeah, that's great information. And the number of impressions for social media is quite interesting with that large increase. I would also guess, and I don't know the exact numbers, or it's been a long time since I've looked at it, but there has to be less than 48,000 pharmacists in the state of Rhode Island, a state that has a population barely over a million. Even when you know, thinking about the number of healthcare providers, it's going to be interesting. So I think that speaks to the effect of, you know, as a group, as a set of established leaders and as a recognizable profession, that it's important where, without a doubt, we can look at these numbers and say that, yes, this went beyond just the pharmacists in the state. I'm sure there are pharmacists in other states, and you probably had some information where you could see folks that were listening to other states, perhaps even from other countries, and just some of the other demographic information, which would be really interesting. But with that, I do want to move to our next question, and we do need to understand the background for the lack of vaccine confidence. And for patients, what can cause vaccine hesitancy and how does it spread? From the perspective of a pharmacist or any other healthcare provider for that matter, what do we need to understand about the sources of information and the messaging that may reduce vaccine confidence for the patients that we're serving?
So vaccine confidence is really an individual's internalization of their experiences that they've lived and what the experiences their close relatives or friends are lived. Humans are actually notoriously bad at sharing and learning from other people's experiences. So we really respond to those that we know and what we see and what we hear. We don't do well learning from a book necessarily, though we like to try as best we can. So when each individual talks about what motivates them or doesn't motivate them to not get a vaccine, it's trying to find out what that cause is. We have had populations that have been abused by the medical system, the Tuskegee Airmen being probably the most famous and the most recognized right now. But there's multiple cases, and we spend a lot of time working with students to go through each of those different populations. At least I have in my role in academia. But then there's the speed the vaccines were developed and understanding the history of vaccine development. That's another area where an average layperson may not understand the science that went into it and how prepared companies were and how prepared healthcare was as a general to develop these vaccines in this particular way. And then the bubble that you live in. Unfortunately, we can't say that everyone has the same influences or hears the same information the same way. So when you put yourself in that bubble and you only hear from one source, it's really challenging. And then one of the challenges both Chris and I worked with, as we worked with underserved populations, there may be only one person in that population who speaks English or has enough command of English to be able to translate for a group of 20 people that they're the main contact for. And they may not be able to translate what they're learning in the healthcare popular media to their family to convince them that it's an appropriate and safe thing to do. That's just one of 100 examples that I know I heard that, not from my lived experience, but something when they told me about it, I'd go, that makes sense. And you really have to sit there and go, what can I do to handle these questions of confidence in the vaccine? And I'm going to let Chris kind of go into what he's been doing, because I think he's so much better at it than me, but it's, you have to listen.
Yeah. You know, that was my prior role as an ambulatory care pharmacist. And I think, you know, you can do reflective listening. You can do, you know, more of the motivational interviewing. I think at the core, you really need to understand what hits home for someone. That could be financial reasons. That could be making your life easier, more efficient, taking down a certain barrier. So when we started to talk about, you know, why are people not getting vaccines? And Matt's point right there could be more of, you know, a cultural barrier, could be a lack of information, could be, I'm scared, I'm nervous. You know, we brought in people when we had the concerns about infertility and affecting pregnancy. One of my coworkers at Rhode Island Hospital, she was actually in the Providence Journal talking about why she received the vaccine, all the research that she spent and the time that she put into it, and that it wasn't just, she was just going on a whim and saying, I need to get it. And we brought in people like that, that really could resonate and could actually be empathetic to that certain group of patients that were concerned. And it's not only, you know, Matt hit the nail on the head right there. And it's really, you know, you got to find something that is going to make sure that it will help that person understand it better. So if you hear it from us, we talked about this weeks on weeks and weeks, but if I bring someone in that's going to really be a better voice for you to hear and learn from, that's what's going to make the difference. So we brought in people like that. We brought in some content experts from the public health system, you know, ICUs, just really trying to get people to understand where vaccine development started, why it was, quote unquote, going so fast. You know, it wasn't the lack of safety and efficacy. You know, when we worked in the clinics, a lot of times it was trying to provide that. For me, it was really providing that extra education, you know, to say, hey, if you're a little bit hesitant, and I can, I don't want to say convince you, but if I can help you feel more comfortable receiving the vaccine, then you go home and to your family and friends, someone's going to say, wow, if that person got the vaccine, I'm definitely going to get it, because that person did not want to get it before they were concerned about it. It could be something as simple as, is it your friend or family that you're looking out for? So doing it for someone else. We've heard that so many different times. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, we saw across different states, different organizations, you see like the Vax-a-Million people doing lottery systems, trying these unique ways, but also going to where people physically are. Now you're seeing a different, you know, different sites, Dunkin' Donuts or wherever, going to churches. And I think after a while, the mass vaccination kind of wore out its welcome. And really, you had to listen to what people actually wanted to make them feel more comfortable. Because at this point, I can't convince someone else more with the data and the safety and efficacy that's out there. It's more of what can I do to make your life better, minimize harm. We talk about harm minimization a lot in other areas of pharmacy practice. So how can I do that and make your life easier? And I think really a lot of our anecdotes that we learned over the course of the past year and a half from friends, family, and practitioners really helped us.
Yeah, Chris and Matt, I'll have one quick follow-up question to this. And it's related to you both talked about bringing in other guests or other experts. How did you go about identifying this? Were these contacts and groups that RIPA had already worked with that maybe were more ingrained in some of those communities, if it was a community group, or was this based on some of the just the networking and connections from the group? Or, of course, the other part is, I mean, to some extent, this may have forced you to develop these new relationships, right, and expand kind of that brand and expand to a new environment. So I'm curious to hear what that was like for the group.
We really explored all those avenues, I think is the correct answer. As the three of us became more familiar with each other and started looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the show, we knew that bringing those other people would be strong and would help both the population we were looking at and helping bring in new populations or concerns that we hadn't thought about. So it started by bringing some of the RIPA people in that had different expertise because they are our members and we wanted to highlight them as best we could. But then we started extending our network to other people like Amanda, Jacinda from Loma Linda University. We started basically reaching out wherever we could, and we started making a joke about it. But with APHA having their weekly show as well, we ended up doing a lot of topics about 1 week ahead of them because we were on the same thought path. And we joked about it a lot, but I'm going to say Jacinda's last name wrong. But when we invited her on, APHA literally invited her on an hour later. So it was a great story and a good way to build the network. But it's something we were able to highlight for our members that we do have those national connections. And RIPA was able to bring them in to talk with them, which is something we probably could not have done if not for the virtual environment.
Yeah, I think it was, Nick, your question spot on. It's our personal connections, you know, not only from our advocacy efforts here in the state, but throughout the country. You know, Matt's has done a tremendous job, you know, throughout his career, you know, leveraging his contacts and showing support both ways. And I'll say her name, Dr. Jacinda Abdul-Mutakabir, or Dr. Jam. But, you know, she was great, gave an awesome perspective for us. She's now actually doing something with the Mass Pharmacy Association as well. You know, I have a very close friend and ID pharmacist up in Boston. You know, our president-elect, Dr. Ginger LeMay, did actually a great overall show on more of helping with stress and anxiety, because that was something, again, education was key, but then we started to hear people burnt out. So she started to help and did a whole show about that, gave some resources. So we really tried to pivot and learn from what was going on from in the community as well.
It's a great story. And it's oftentimes the relationships and the steps you've taken along the way, you don't know how they're going to benefit you until something like a pandemic happens and you're trying to define these additional experts. I do love hearing the story as far as the outreach and the guest part of it that's there. Rhode Island, certainly known for being a small state, but not diminutive in its power, though, and the great people that are there. Now, Chris and Matt, I do have a final question for you related to vaccine confidence, and it's going to be about thinking forward, what comes next and what you as the group are doing next. So how do we continue to improve vaccine confidence? We're at a time now where, at the time of this recording, we're seeing the Delta variant, you know, creeping up more and more, hospitalizations, and in some cases deaths, especially for those people that are not vaccinated. Those are starting to be pretty robust numbers, where in some cases we're, you know, hearing from hospitals and health professionals that, you know, their beds, their ICUs are as full as they were back in November or December 2020. So that's really not an ideal situation. And it's really too bad, because we do have a vaccine that is, again, safe and effective, but we still have effective messaging that we have to get to much of the population. So what can a pharmacist or any other healthcare provider continue to do to improve vaccine confidence for individuals? And then I guess, you know, as the final question related to that, for the RIPA team, you know, what's going to be coming up next?
To keep people considering to get the vaccine is there's a couple of things. And Chris hit one of the nails right on the head. We can't convince anybody. We can only give them enough information for them to make the choice at this point. Provided we're providing that information in multiple ways, you have to provide it in a way that that person's ready to receive it. We've talked about, as pharmacists for years, smoking cessation. We've all been trained on how to do that effectively. Giving vaccine confidence to a patient is the same idea, meeting them where they are. And that means a lot of listening and being willing to have that conversation when you're standing, you know, wherever you may be when the topic comes up. I've had the conversation standing in a lobby, waiting in a line with a security officer because it became a topic of conversation. That's where he was ready to have the conversation, and I was prepared to do it because we had that information available to us. Where we're going, I think I'm going to hand over to Chris because now it's his turn to take the wheel for this.
Yeah, I think the job's not done. I think now you are seeing people with the Delta variant reconsider their choice, and that could be because of, you know, they're trying to travel. Maybe their job is requiring it. Their school is requiring it. So I think you're going to see renewed interest in it coming up shortly. I think right now there's some things we need to navigate because there's questions of, you know, people, should I get the third vaccine versus should I get it at all? And, you know, I think the thing here is that there's different pockets across the country that have different vaccination rates. You know, up here in the Northeast in Rhode Island, we're pretty good, especially in also in Massachusetts and Connecticut. So I think here, you know, that question is a different perspective compared to some other states across the country. So, you know, getting a third vaccine, great for some person, especially maybe in an immunocompromised, you know, it's not approved, it's not suggested at this moment, but that's where, you know, people are getting it. But I think the key here is to try to get people vaccinated in the first place that were not otherwise. So I think in terms of our messaging, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, what does the community need? So if we, you know, we renew doing this show or doing different forms of messaging from our IPA standpoint, I think we do have to really listen to what's going on in the news. And if we start to feel that there's more of a need to get education out there, then we'll do it. Another area that we've done historically and also, you know, we'll continue to do is we provide grants for pharmacists and students across and scholarships across the state. So if people have a way or a project to try to disseminate more information or outreach to the general population, underserved communities, we're always going to explore and really support those efforts. I think, you know, again, the year coming up, you know, flu vaccinations, that's another area that we can really provide benefit as well. Matt, myself, and really Dr. Ginger LeMay and Jeffrey Bratberg, they did an excellent job with some of the students last year of really vaccinating a large proportion of the URI community. So I think things like that where pharmacists can really get involved hands-on is going to be important. But I think at the end of the day, we have to read the pulse and see what we can do to react to it and start there.
Thanks, Chris and Matt. And my final question related to this was going to be, are you continuing the show or is your show going to be coming back on Facebook and something? And Chris, you said it, where it's going to follow the data. It's going to follow the conversations. You know, that's been there. So it sounds like that may be coming back, and stay tuned to RIPA for updates. But a question for both of you, you know, with launching that series and not launching that information, were there any other surprises, you know, from you and from the RIPA group, anything that was unexpected? Because, you know, as you said, this was done because you wanted to share more information. But, you know, what else did you learn along the way that you could apply going forward? Maybe it's more, you know, or better use of social media that you learned along the way. Maybe it's better ways you can outreach with other groups. What were the other benefits to hosting this series and providing this education that wasn't necessarily intended, but really kind of changes how the group thinks going forward?
I think one of the big takeaways that I heard from our council meetings and from talking to members is we were engaging with a different age group. Every state association has challenges with making sure that newer or younger pharmacists have a reason to be engaged and have a way to be engaged, because the traditional take the day off, go to the meeting, do the CEs, those don't necessarily work anymore for the frontline pharmacists because of the younger families and just the way the world is structured now within practice. So engaging with them where they are is the same as almost listening to how we talk about engaging with patients in vaccine confidence, but it's engaging where pharmacists are and being willing to go to them and adjust. It's setting up that Facebook cast where, you know, we are doing it every Wednesday at 7 o'clock, but people watch it during the course of the entire week. We never had a day where it was just that day was the only day people watched. It was, okay, they're on their way home or they're on at the gym and they have an opportunity to listen to the association. It gave us the confidence to do our conference virtually for the first couple times, kind of because we had to, but also because we knew our members would engage that way once we started engaging them on Facebook. It didn't mean we could let anything we've done in the past go, because we do have to respect the pharmacists that maybe aren't as social media adept, but we did incorporate new ways and new things that probably aren't going away. We had one of our most successful online events this year, and probably one of our biggest, most successful student events in a long time, as we did a student-focused pairing social media Zoom, essentially. And we had 40 students and 30 pharmacists. Like, it was almost a one-to-one. And it's something we never would have had if we tried to do it in person.
Yeah, I think for me, the first thing I want to say, it's always great when the statistics back up what Matt says, and they actually do. So we had 64.4% female viewership. And then our demographics, 25 to 34, and then 35 to 44 were our top, nearly 20% for both categories. If you break that down further, we still had consistent viewership, you know, beyond 45 and beyond 65 plus. So there was certainly an outreach to a broad array of age viewerships, you know, and members and non-members, friends and family. I know a lot of us, you know, shared it with other people that were interested in learning more. So at the end of the day, what was I surprised about? How many people actually wanted to listen to us, you know, after one or two times, and you go into like 30, 40, 50 times and the same people are watching. And, you know, the fact that, you know, if we had one missed week, which it only happened twice, that people asked us, like, are we going to still have them? And then even towards the end, we actually alternate to try to wean people off the show. We announced this on the show, but did every other week, and people said, are you going to still have it? And it was really interesting to hear the feedback. And it really showed, you know, that, you know, just even having one or two people say how much value it provided, that at the end of the day, that's what makes the difference and makes you enjoy it. So for me, I thought I would enjoy it. I didn't think that I would enjoy it as much as I did 58 weeks in. I never wanted it to stop. I'll be on record to say that. Matt knows that. But really, I think, you know, it also allowed a platform for people to expect information to be shared, messages around what was going on. We had a lot going on with the emergency authorizations, you know, here within the state, and regulations that were changing. So we were able to use that as a platform for not only COVID-19 information sharing, but also updates on advocacy issues, on legislative issues, on what was going on with our, you know, awards, our membership stuff. Everything was really went through that show to really lift up RIPA. So I think that's what I thought was great. We really got us a digital footprint moving forward.
That's a great realization. I know with our work at the Quality Corner Show here at PQS, I explain it often like an iceberg, where, you know, people only see the recording or only hear the recording, and they assume, oh, that's the time that goes into that. But again, like an iceberg, that's just the tip of that, what you're seeing above the ocean, where there's a lot that goes into it. So Chris, I can definitely share those feelings that you have. It's fun to do and it's engaging. It's great to have that engagement, but there's a lot that goes on in the background. So you really have to have a team that understands the process and having a purpose for it. And it looks like for the RIPA team, it's provided a lot of benefit to the organization in many ways for outreach. And those are gonna be lessons learned for the group going forward. So I do love to hear that. But with that, it is going to wrap up our content for today's show and our questions on the primary topic of vaccine confidence. And there remains work not only for education on the COVID vaccines, but also for other vaccines. As we record and publish this episode, flu season and flu shots should be starting shortly. I know I was speaking with a pharmacy team today, and they're expecting flu shots in the next 2 weeks. And there are, of course, a number of other routine vaccines that may be important for either children, adolescents, or for those that are 65 and older with the elderly population, where routine vaccines may be definitely warranted. But that does wrap up our clinical focus for today's show. Before we close, we do always present our guest with a question that is not necessarily related to pharmacy, but we want to focus on individual performance improvement. So Matt, Chris, for the two of you, what have you learned as a new skill or developed an existing skill during the last year. Obviously, doing Facebook shows and media promotion, that might be it. But if you cover something else, that would be great. So would like to hear from you. What have you learned or developed as a new skill set for yourself, either in your personal or professional life?
For me, Nick, the thing that I think I've most appreciated learning is really working with underserved communities in a different way. It's something that I've lived in different parts of the country and have worked with different types of underserved communities. But I think as far as healthcare goes, it wasn't always as apparent to me as it was working in with the different communities here in Rhode Island when we were targeting them through the different work that we were doing. It gave me a better appreciation. It allowed me to have better examples for students when we talk about social determinants of health, how people connect things in their head that maybe is not always apparent. And it's really helped me have those conversations with students. It might have been a little heavy-handed sometimes because I might have been doing some of the virtual lectures from a vaccine clinic where the people are passing around behind me, but it's helped inform not only the conversation about vaccines, but the greater global conversation that's happened in the last couple of years for me.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this before, Matt and I, and, you know, I think mine started actually a few years ago, and this really supported, you know, a little bit of a change in my eyes. But, you know, a couple of years back, I did a medical mission with a friend and colleague of mine in Ecuador. And, you know, when you go to some of these clinics and you see simple things that can show benefit to people, like multivitamins for kids, and seeing that, you know, for us here in the United States, that means nothing to us, right? We take it for granted, whatever. Flintstone vitamins are great, they taste great. But, you know, showing what value that simple thing and that gesture can actually provide can make a huge difference. So to Matt's point, you know, many of the pharmacists, this isn't just us, many of the pharmacists spent 20, 30 hours really helping different communities. And so whether it was, you know, older patients, it was underserved communities, you know, I spent a lot of time working in Central Falls, many of those clinics, and then some other Latino clinics as well. And, you know, those just to see the excitement or the appreciation over receiving the vaccine, you know, and not taking that for granted meant a lot to me. And sometimes it was simply people would ask a simple question. Can I still take my metformin with taking the vaccine? I'm really concerned. I have diabetes. And just answering that question, which to me, I was like, of course you can. But to see that relief in their eyes and just say, I feel okay. I thought that was great. And to me, it helped me feel good and also reinforced to say, you know, what you're doing is right and that people are appreciating it. And in the end, you know, it's really going to support making a difference in public health.
Appreciate those references, guys. And I want to add and make sure we call it out at this point as well. When we were looking to identify guests for this podcast episode, it was a nice coincidence that I happen to have a pre-existing relationship with both Matt and Chris, again, from Rhode Island, University of Rhode Island, RIPA. But the reason they were identified is because RIPA did win a national immunization award from the American Pharmacists Association that was here in 2021, specifically related to those immunization and immunization advocacy efforts. So me reaching out to these guys, it's not just because I like them or I know them. That was certainly helpful. But Matt and Chris, I do want to especially congratulate for you and the RIPA team for that award as well. It's a great recognition, and I'm sure something you're both very proud of.
Thanks, Nick. It was a great honor, and it really speaks to the dedication of all of our members. When we talk about the clinics we worked at, it was never just one or two of us. There was always all the pharmacists in the state helping across. And there's, as we look at our awards program coming up, we're recognizing a lot of the work people did just over and above the call of duty that every pharmacist did this year. But it's just amazing to look at what they did and who they helped.
I agree, Matt. You know, if we look at people within RIPA, we have those that serve public health on a national level involved in this whole process. We had, you know, some people that put together a just-in-time training for pediatric to help ease pharmacists. That was a complaint or concern that pharmacists felt really concerned of. How do we immunize younger patients? And we put that together at the College of Pharmacy and we're able to deliver and do things like that. So it wasn't just tied to a single or 58 shows. It was tied to all the efforts that people have done across the board. And I think without their support, we would have never been able to even be considered. So it's a nice recognition, but it really speaks to the volume of what everyone did over the course of the year.
recognizing team over oneself. But really, all you guys are hitting all the key notes here, and it really speaks to the values of the RIPA organization. Now, final item, though, will be about both of you individually. You've been great guests, provide a lot of great information from what you've learned and how you have promoted vaccine confidence and appropriate education and information. There's got to be other pharmacists and other healthcare providers that are listening to this episode and that would love to contact you with more questions. So I don't mean to put more work on your plates, but do you mind sharing how folks can contact you or what's the best way to contact you if they have questions about the experiences that you've shared today?
Yeah, Matt's pointing at me. You guys can't see this on camera, but or listening in. But, you know, certainly, you know, we do enjoy social media outreach. So whether that's on our Facebook account, LinkedIn, personally, you know, we also both have Twitter accounts. So I'm at CFedRx. Matt's at Potter LaCroix. And but our social media for RIPA is RI underscore pharmacist for Instagram and at RI pharmacist for Twitter. So hit us up on social, send us a message, reach out to us individually. We'd be happy to talk to you. Email is fine as well. So
excellent. Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Chris, for being on the show today. Really appreciated the information that you shared. And that is going to now finally wrap up our content for today's episode. And for our listening audience, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you have a question or topic, please let us know. Similarly, if you have a topic that you would like us to address on the show, or if you would like to come on the show and talk about something, we would love that. You can DM us on Twitter at PharmacyQuality, or you can email us at info@pharmacyquality.com. With that, I again appreciate you listening to the Quality Corner show. And there is one final message from the PQS team.
The Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner show has a request for you. Our goal is to spread the word about how quality measurement can help improve health outcomes, and we need your help in sharing this podcast to friends and colleagues in the healthcare industry. We also want you to provide feedback, ask us questions, and suggest health topics you'd like to see covered. If you are a health expert and you want to contribute to the show or even talk on the show, please contact us. You can email info@pharmacyquality.com. Let us know what is on your mind, what we can address, so that you are fully informed. We want you to be able to provide the best care for your patients and members, and we wish all of you listeners out there well.